Sounds like a lot of fun. Christine, that's you singing, right? So can you tell us what you're doing there?
It is me. That was my first window concert at the Veterans Home that I played during the pandemic, during the lockdown. And I hadn't seen them in, about a couple of months, I guess. And I was just so happy to be playing for them. I was outside and they were lined up along the windows. And there was a man up on the second floor. There were two levels and he was dancing in the window. And I just had so much joy and was so happy at that moment because I was back doing what I love to do. Wow. And for all the people that I love so much. So it was a wonderful day. And that's one of the happiest songs I know. So that's why I started with that song. It's just a perfect beginning, I thought.
And these window concerts, you called them?
Yes. Well, because in the Veterans Home and all of the nursing homes in, you know, well, everywhere have been shut down to visitors. So I normally play there every week and we were trying to figure out a way other than live streaming, which didn't, you know, I did some YouTube videos, but I wanted to see them. So we figured out a way to bring them out to this, it's hard to describe really, it was kind of like a porch that's enclosed in windows, and they opened a couple. It was too cold to be outside. Mm-hmm. So everybody came out onto the porch, but I was calling it the parking lot tour for a while, but they were at the windows. And so I couldn't really still see them as well as I normally would, but just knowing they were there and it was just a wonderful day.
Yeah. So. Well, this is Christine Scheel. And Christine's a musician who, as you heard, she does window concerts for residents in assisted living facilities. And you're joining us today from Haddon Township in New Jersey. And the reason why we wanted to hear the story of your concerts, Christine, is because of something you just said a minute or two ago. How does it make you feel to go out there? Do the effort, play the music. I mean, we know it makes the residents feel joyful. I can see that man's dancing in the window as you described him. But how does it make you feel?
Oh, it just joy, pure joy. I called when I started my business of playing for nursing homes. I call it sharing the joy of music, and it just gives me so much joy. And I tell people it's the greatest joy of my life to be able to do this. And I don't really even know what else to say other than it's just pure joy, seeing the smiles on their faces, seeing them moving and dancing, tapping their toes when I can see them up close. It's just wonderful.
Wow. So doing this act of kindness for others, you feel like you're the beneficiary, actually.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'll always feel that way.
Yeah. Well, it turns out there's a lot of science behind why that is. It's really good for us to be kind to others, apparently. There's a lot of evidence for that. And that's what we want to explore today in the show. This show being On Point from WBUR. And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And Christine, let me just play for folks a little bit more of you singing. This is just a classic song. I'm not even going to give the title for now. But so this is Christine doing one of her concerts for residents.
He won't be lonesome. And the doggy will have a good home. Now, you've requested this, so I want to hear the barking. How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail. How much is that doggy in the window?
Now, I'd love to hear the story of why you started doing these concerts.
Oh, well, I actually started doing these concerts. You mean the concerts for the veterans or just in general?
In general, yeah.
In general, when my mom was in an assisted living facility back in 2000, well, six. I probably started in 2007. I would just go and play the piano that they had in the lobby. And, you know, other residents would come out and listen. And they, I tried to get them to sing along, and I didn't have the strongest voice. So I went out and got a microphone and got them to sing along with me. And I did this quite often. And the director of the building said, you know, we pay people to do this. And I was like, really? And so they had me, I decided to try to do this as a job. And I went out and did some flyers and got into some nursing homes and assisted living facilities. But so that's kind of how my business started. But I continued to volunteer at my mom's. And even she moved facilities, and in the new facility, I also was able to volunteer and do programs there for the residents there. And I also ended up, I'm not sure how it happened, but I ended up becoming the head of the little choir that they had. And they were called the Starlights. And, but the Veterans Home is kind of my main volunteering place. I do have weekly jobs there, but I also do, on a volunteer basis, I do a lot of concerts in the auditorium for them. And, I do room visits for some of the residents that can't come to the programs, and that's kind of an extra thing I do.
So I want to talk in a second about the people that you've met because of this volunteering. But if for a second, can we just talk a little bit more about what it meant to you to be able to do this, to be closer to your mom, right? Because I believe she had dementia, right?
Yeah, it was very difficult. And as people, anyone who's dealt with someone with dementia, you know how difficult it is to visit sometimes, because you don't really know what to talk about. And, you know, so the music really just brought us together. It gave us something to do. She loved it because I was playing for everybody else, and she was, you know, still a proud mom. So it made her happy. And it was just something we could do together, because she never forgot the songs that she knew her whole life. And, you know, I know a lot of those songs because of her. And so it was just this connection we had. And sometimes we didn't have anything else. So we just would sing songs. And if I took her to a doctor appointment, we would sing songs in the car, and I put on the 50s, 60s station. And so it was just very special, special moments that I had with her.
That is so, I've heard that story so often. People talking about their parents who suffer from dementia, and it's songs or prayers that they learned as children that are the things that stay. And it's like that's that very delicate chord of connection that maybe even the last one that remains. Now, your mother's passed away since then, right?
Yes, she died in 2016.
Yeah. And I suppose at that moment you had a choice of whether or not to continue doing the volunteering, the concerts. And why'd you keep doing it?
Well, I don't really know. It wasn't really a conscious decision, I guess. I just continued to do what I was doing. And, I don't really know, other than that's just what I always did.
maybe not knowing is exactly the reason why. Because I wonder if I don't want to put words in your mouth, but is it something that you just kind of felt was just a part of your life and you had to keep doing?
I guess so. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I just love it. It is part of my life. So, and it's a connection to my mom and to my dad, who he died in 2004. And, you know, being able to continue the music that they encouraged when I was a kid, to be able to do something like this with it. I know that would make them very proud, and my dad especially.
Well, we've just got a couple of minutes here, Christine. I was wondering if you could just tell me you must be meeting some incredible people in your volunteer work with the veterans homes. Is there a particular person you want to just share with us?
Oh, wow. It's There are just so many characters. I mean, they're just so funny and kind. And there was a man who used to make me baked ziti. They would let him cook in the kitchen, and he would make me baked ziti and write me love notes. There was another man that I used to torture with a pink maraca. He always wore pink shirts, so I always gave him this pink maraca to play, and he would always act like he didn't want to play it, but secretly I know he loved it. And it's just so hard. It's hard to pick one person, but it's I don't know. These just ridiculous connections. One guy used to say, I'd say, "How you doing, Harry?" And he'd go, "Every day's a bonus." another one would say to me, you know, "How you doing, Pete?" And he'd say, "I'm still above the ground chasing women." So little things like that, yeah, that just, you know, crack me up. And then they would tell me, share serious things about their lives and about their families. And it's just such a wonderful slice of life.
Well, Christina, I've got like 20 seconds left with you. Last little question.
Yes.
Do you feel better on the days when you're doing these concerts than on the days that you're not?
Yes. And some days when I wake up and I'm not feeling so great, I get there and I start to play and everything just kind of fades away and it's nothing but the music and that's really all that matters.
Well, Christine Scheel is a musician who does sing-along programs at nursing homes and assisted living facilities in South New Jersey, and she's getting us started on talking about the mutual benefits of kindness. Christine, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We'll have more in a moment. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And today we are exploring the science behind the mutual benefits of kindness. How being kind to others obviously doesn't just have a positive impact on the person receiving the kindness, but a measurable impact on the person giving the kindness. And we're going to take a look at the research that's been exploring how and why that happens. And we heard from so many On Point listeners about how giving kindness changed them. So, for example, here's Anne Isham. She called us from Albuquerque, New Mexico. And Anne told us that after her husband, Paul, died in 2019, she committed herself to honoring his memory by channeling his generosity. And she gave us this example.
Last fall, I went to the doctor for something that turned out to be nothing. As I was waiting in the queue, appropriately distanced, I couldn't help overhearing parts of the conversation the payment clerk was having with the patient ahead of me, a young man in work clothes, heavy boots, covered in caliche dust, and surely having taken off from work. Because you have a balance owing, credit card, can you pay $50? The guy was obviously distraught and worried about his job. About then, I was waved to another clerk just beyond his. I'm retired on Medicare, owed nothing. I had a $50 bill in my purse that I carry for emergencies. It had been there for at least a year doing nothing. So on my way past his clerk, I laid the $50 bill beside her computer and said, "This is for him." It took me less than a minute to clear through my checkout. On my way out, he turned to me, pulled down his face mask, revealing a face of immense relief and a dazzling smile, and thanked me Who knew a $50 bill could do so much? I can't describe how good that felt. It confirmed for me the benefits of channeling for Paul.
That's On Point listener Anne Isham from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Well, joining us now from Hanover, New Hampshire, is Jack Beatty, On Point news analyst. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Magda.
And also with us from Vancouver, Canada, is Nancy Sin. She's assistant professor of psychology at the University of British Columbia, and her research focuses on biological and behavioral pathways linking daily well-being and stress to health. Professor Sin, welcome to you.
Hi, Magna. Thanks for having me.
So you heard Christine and you heard Anne there both saying they felt so good in doing even small acts of kindness for others. In a sense, it's kind of an intuitive thing. But you're doing research that's looking into why that's happening. Can you tell us, first of all, a little bit about why you wanted to even explore this question?
Mm-hmm. So I've been doing this work before the pandemic, but certainly during the pandemic, at least, you know, back in March, we were hearing news stories and social media stories, just like Christine's, about people who were volunteering their time to help others. And I was interested in whether these would have benefits for the person providing the help.
Okay, so then how did you go about trying to answer that?
We conducted a large survey. So we had over 1,000 adults in the U.S. and Canada, and we were really interested in getting a snapshot of their daily lives during the pandemic. So we asked people to fill out surveys every day, telling us what activities they engaged in and how they felt that day. And specifically, we asked whether people engaged in any formal volunteering. So that's volunteering through a group or an organization, such as a church or a school, whether they provided any support or help to someone else for reasons related to COVID-19, and whether they received any help or support for reasons related to COVID-19. And what we found was that on days when people provided help or received help, they felt happier and they also felt more satisfied with their social relationships. And that, I think that's crucial for bolstering our well-being during such a stressful time.
Mm. So tell me then a little bit more. People reported feeling happier, so an immediate mm-hmm. measurable psychological benefit. Were there other I don't know if you did these measurements, but were there other sort of related benefits beyond just the feeling happier? I mean, you talked about the social well-being, but mm-hmm. how much more can we measure sort of the difference that it made to people to be kind to others?
Yeah. We also looked at negative emotions, uh-huh. and that's important because people have reported really high negative emotions and depressive symptoms and loneliness during the pandemic. So we do find that when a person helps someone else, then they have a reduction in their negative emotions on those days. And I don't think this is trivial. There's a huge amount of research showing that our emotional well-being then is related to our physical health, our stress levels, and how long we live. So I believe that these day-to-day experiences can accumulate over time to shape longer-term health.
Well, Jack, let me pull you in here because, in a sense, what Professor Sin is doing is sort of putting some research rigor on what I think are some human truths that you know, maybe we've known for quite some time. What do you think?
Oh, I think so. And, you know, reciprocally, to be unkind is to, for a moral nature, is to hurt oneself. And I think one of the great examples of that, of a person being unkind and then realizing how not only have they hurt the person they were unkind to, but offended their own moral being, comes in Emma, Jane Austen's novel. She introduces Emma. Emma Woodhouse, handsome, clever, and rich, with a comfortable home and happy disposition, seemed to unite some of the best blessings of existence and had lived nearly 21 years in the world with very little to distress or vex her. Well, comes a scene where there's a picnic and Emma and her smart set of friends are there, along with Miss Bates, who is the village addlepate, a garrulous person, almost unbearable to read, but a good-hearted person. And Emma proposes a game. Let's everybody say three dull things. And Miss Bates responds, "Oh, very well. Then I need not be uneasy. Three things, very dull indeed. That'll just do for me, you know. I shall be sure to say three dull things as soon as I ever open my mouth, shall I? Do you think it? I shall," she says to everyone. Emma could not resist. "Ah, ma'am. But there may be a difficulty. Pardon me, but you will be limited as to number. Only three dull things at once." And then Miss Bates, deceived by the mock ceremony of her manner, did not immediately catch her meaning. But when it burst on her, it could not anger, though a slight blush showed that it could pain her. "Ah, well, to be sure. Yes, I see what she means," turning to Mr. Knightley, "and will try to hold my tongue. I must make myself very disagreeable, or she would not have said such a thing to an old friend." Well, Mr. Knightley reproves Emma and basically says, "How could you have been so hurtful?" And driving home, Emma thinks, never had she felt so agitated, mortified, grieved at any circumstance in her life. She was most forcibly struck. The truth of his representation, there was no denying. She felt it at her heart. How could she have been so brutal, so cruel to Miss Bates? And this is the beginning of Emma's becoming a real and attractive person. She does this unkind thing. She feels it lacerating her nature and goes and makes amends with Miss Bates.
Wow. So, Professor Sin, Jane Austen there, giving us a sort of a literary exposition on the effects of unkindness. Have you seen that sort of in reality in your research about sort of, is there a mirror effect on when people either withhold kindness or act with cruelty?
Yes. So there's a huge amount of research showing that when people are difficult to others and when they're hostile, that actually hurts the person who is being hostile, that people who are more hostile tend to have higher rates of heart disease and risk for premature death. So certainly I think being unkind can eat away at a person. And in that story with Emma, I think that being able to turn a negative experience like that and to grow from it is so important for really helping a person to develop and to maintain a better sense of well-being. Mm.
Well, I want to keep talking in a second about your research, Professor Sin. But as I mentioned a little earlier, we heard from a lot of listeners about this topic, about the impact that being kind has had on them. So, for example, here's Jackie Jorgensen. She called us from Sonoma County, California. And of course, California has not just suffered from the pandemic like the rest of the country, but also devastating forest fires in recent years. And here's what Jackie said.
You know, I was on the line. I thought I was going to move my family out of this place that we love and call home. And then I was struck by a different kind of inspiration and started a foundation called the Volunteer Fire Foundation to support the firefighters who have given so much to this community to save homes, to save lives in these four disastrous fires we've experienced since 2017. And I have to say that giving back to them has been one of the most cathartic healing experiences of my life. And, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, we all feel so much gratitude for the firefighters, but they're getting so much back by doing work that fills them up. And I've noticed that the people from the community who have come forward to donate to my organization, they get filled up. And so suddenly it's this three-way, incredible gratitude cycle that has blossomed in the wake of tragedy.
That's Jackie Jorgensen, an On Point listener who called us from Sonoma County, California. Now, Professor Sin, I'm curious, how much So when you surveyed folks for this this research this year in the midst of the pandemic, first of all, who did you survey, and were there particular groups that sort of, I don't know, volunteered more, or what did you find about who's more naturally, if I can put it that way, doing these acts of kindness?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great question. We surveyed adults ages 18 to 91, so a huge age range. And we were particularly interested in age differences. So we know that older adults are the backbone of the volunteering workforce in the US and Canada. But this pandemic obviously poses more risk for older adults, at least in terms of potential complications and risk for mortality from COVID-19. So we were really interested in whether older adults were still, in fact, helping others at higher rates than younger and middle-aged adults. And that was something that we did find. So just like before the pandemic, we found that older adults were still providing more support to other people during this time.
And so when we say support, is it, mm-hmm. does the positive health benefit of being the giver, does that come with in-person support? Because, I mean, one of the truths about this pandemic, as you're pointing to, is that we're asked to stay actually apart from each other.
Mm-hmm. So I believe that much of the support that was provided was actually remotely done. So people have reported kind of dropping off groceries or food for their neighbors, or a lot of people reported just having conversations and talking to their loved ones or their people in their social networks. So I think that much of it could be done remotely. And in fact, we do know it's the case that volunteering in some ways has gone remote or at least contactless during this pandemic.
Okay. So that's interesting, because I honestly wondered if, I mean, we're talking about the health and well-being positive consequences. And I just did wonder if you actually had to be physically present with the person you're being kind to, mm-hmm. to sort of get that biofeedback almost. But you're saying it can happen remotely.
Yes. And I think what's important is having that social connection. And certainly it feels different when you're with a person physically versus being apart, really, and doing this remotely. But we do find that people are showing these emotional benefits from helping others.
Yeah. Jack, I just want to turn back to you here. Your thoughts on what Professor Sin is saying about what she's finding about kindness.
Well, it can't really surprise us. We've all had experiences with it, and it does make us feel good. But Dr. Johnson sort of ups the moral ante. He praises a man for quote, being kind to the ungrateful. Mm. In other words, there's something a little even more meritorious to be kind to people who are not grateful for it. You do it just simply out of the fullness of your goodness, of your nature. And you don't get back the return of thank you. But you do get the comfort that the professor describes of feeling you've done a good thing, but you've got to sort of overlook the ungrateful person for whom you've done it.
Oh, Professor Sin, I don't know if your research took a look at that. Like, was the benefit greater when people actually were doing acts of kindness that might have actually been more difficult because the receiver didn't perhaps, I don't know if I should say, wasn't deserving of the kindness?
Oh, great question. We actually did not look into that. But what I will say is that there is past research suggesting that providing support to other people, either it could be emotional support or it could be what we call tangible or practical support. So, for example, driving your neighbor to see the doctor. And we find that these kinds of support tend to occur. It's like a two-way street. So if you're helping someone else, they're most likely also helping you. And you can imagine during the pandemic when people are so stressed, if you call up a friend in order to They might be supporting you while you also support them. So I think it's this dichotomy between being a provider versus a recipient. In reality, it might not be so separate.
Yeah. Well, this hour we are exploring research that has taken a look at linking acts of kindness with higher positive individual emotions and greater social satisfaction. Professor Nancy Sin joins us, and Jack Beatty, On Point News analyst, is with us as well. We'll have more stories of acts of kindness and their mutual benefit when we come back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we are exploring the mutual benefit of acts of kindness. And actually, we're really focusing on the positive benefit that being a giver of kindness has on the person doing the giving. Professor Nancy Sin joins us, and Jack Beatty, On Point News analyst, is with us as well. And Nancy and Jack, I'm wondering if you could just listen along with me, because we have so many good stories from folks here, and I want to share another. This is Allison Cook. She's 23. And she's a grad student at Dalhousie University in Halifax, Nova Scotia in Canada. And since the pandemic began, she's been volunteering for something called the Get Connected program at the Northwood Long-Term Care Facility.
And this was an opportunity for volunteers to reach out to seniors that were living in the Northwood facility and make weekly calls to them to keep them company, make sure that they weren't lonely, and just go through the pandemic together. So I started calling seniors from Northwood. I called, I would say, probably close to 80 seniors the first week, just asking if they were interested or not.
Now, among those 80 seniors, Allie met a woman who was 60 years older than her.
My name is Charlotte Rose Burns, and I was born in September the 1st, 1937. And I'm very independent so far. I try to be. I'm getting elderly, that's for sure.
So the first time I ever talked to Charlotte was March 14th. And she was a little bit skeptical of me. I think she was kind of like, why is this random 23-year-old calling me? I think at first she kind of had this idea that maybe I wanted something or I had an ulterior motive.
And she said, no, she just wanted to know how I was doing. I said, I'm fine. I worry more about the younger people.
We would chat for probably a half an hour, and we were just kind of chatting about things like the weather. She would ask for updates on the pandemic, and then we just started kind of realizing things. Like, I was so interested in learning more about her nursing career, and so that really helped to kind of take our relationship off the ground.
I like talking to her. She's young. She's very interesting to talk to.
So since then, that was mid-March, we've been talking on the phone anywhere from a half an hour to sometimes 3 or 4 hours once a week, usually Wednesday afternoons.
And we talk about different things when she was growing up, and she listens to some of my stories about growing up. Now she's going away for Christmas, of course. Her mom and her grandmother are sending me a Christmas card, and it's nice to keep in touch.
Following, I would say, about 4 months of our calling, the pandemic had kind of calmed down here in Halifax, and they provided us with the opportunity to meet outside of the Northwood campus. And seeing her for the first time was so funny. She's very tiny. And it's funny because she has so much personality. You wouldn't think that that much personality could come from a little 4'11", 83-year-old woman.
Well, I saw her picture because it was on the internet here, right?
But we met for the first time, and it was like, it was so magical. It was like we had known each other all of our lives.
I used to meet her up in the park right around the corner from me, and we kept our distance.
And then she was telling me one day that she was kind of sad because a Northwood long-term care facility usually has a garden for their residents. And I have a garden at home. And it just so happened that I was visiting that weekend. So I was actually able to go home and pick her a ton of vegetables from the garden and drop them off. And it was just funny because we hadn't seen each other, but I just wanted to do these things for her.
Well, it means a lot. When the nursing home was open, we had a drugstore here. We can't go there anymore, down to the halls. I used to meet people on the other side, independent living, have chats with them, and I miss meeting the people and chatting with them.
When everything happened during the pandemic and everything was shut down, I found myself feeling kind of lost and just kind of spending my days watching, you know, bad Netflix shows, and having that to do every week to think, you know, oh, I have to call Charlotte and we're going to have a great talk, and just having that laugh every hour, that guaranteed laugh and good chat with someone in the community was so positive for my mental health. Because you never know when you're trying to do something nice, when that could come around and be just exactly what you needed in that time.
Even when this ends, I hope we'll still become good friends. I mean, it won't be the same. We won't be waiting for each other. Like, I have her number. She said, call me anytime. Like, if you need anything, she could drop it off down. No, I don't want a young person taking time for me, because she's only a young person. She got her life, too. And I appreciate her keeping in touch with me.
I was so nervous to try this program and to try to call people that I'd never met before. And I thought, how will I ever carry a conversation with these people? And putting myself out there and just being vulnerable opened me up to one of my favorite things that I have in Halifax now, and that's her.
That's 23-year-old Allison Cook and 83-year-old Charlotte Burns, both of Halifax, Nova Scotia. Well, Professor Sin, I love that story. I love it so very much. There's so much we could talk about in terms of what Allison and Charlotte are experiencing. But there's one little moment at the end where Charlotte says, you know, she doesn't want – it seems like she says she doesn't necessarily want to be – she doesn't want Allison to think that she keeps expecting her to call, right? Because she's a young person. She has her life. She doesn't – it sounds to me like she feels like she doesn't want to be a burden, right? Now, that to me is really interesting because – I'm not saying that this is the case with Charlotte, but isn't there research that shows that sometimes being on the receiving end of an act of kindness, like, may not actually the receiver doesn't feel like they're benefiting?
Yes. That story, I love that story. And Charlotte, what she said really illustrated this. So there's been research showing some mixed findings about whether receiving support would actually benefit the recipient's mental health. And and there are some potential reasons for this. So one reason is that when you receive support, well, usually you're in a situation where you're in need, or you might be under elevated stress. Receiving support can make the recipient feel inadequate. It could potentially undermine their independence, especially if they didn't ask for that support in the first place. There could be a mismatch between the kind of support that you need and what you actually get. And you can imagine, for example, if you just want to call up a friend to vent, but your friend wants to just give you advice and tell you what to do to fix your problem, that there's a mismatch between the kind of support that you want to get and what you actually do receive. So in the past, it's been shown that sometimes when a person receives support, it can actually increase their negative emotions.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So Jack, let me turn back to you here, because you're bridging these worlds here between between science and what literature says about the mutual benefit of kindness. And I was wondering if you had another thought to share with us.
Well, along lines of not, you know, your act of kindness not being received so well, there is Hamlet's line where he's talking to his mother, Gertrude, and he says, I must be cruel only to be kind. And then he goes on and he says, don't sleep with that bloat king again. Don't let him pinch wanton on your cheeks, call you mouse, call you bunny. And he goes on and just simply says, this is a terrible man. I'm being cruel in saying this. You love him, but you can't do it. You can't go to him. And I think that that catches something. A lot of people are say, I don't want to, you know, I have to be hard on you because I want to be kind to you. But what often happens is the hard predominates. Mm-hmm. The cruel wins out. The kind gets dimmed. And the person who'll tell you the home truth is often the self-righteous prig who delights in sort of exposing other people's illusions. That's not very helpful.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. So, Professor Sin, I mean, I didn't even take a second to define with you what we mean by acts of kindness. So, what do you think about what Jack pointed out?
Oh, well, the way I think about acts of kindness would just be voluntary activities that a person engages in order to benefit another person or to bring benefit to the society or to social causes that someone really cares about. But yeah, there could be a wide range of ways to think about acts of kindness.
Yeah. No, because I mean, Jack's pointing out this, well, I guess in Hamlet, right? The idea that like, in order to be kind to you long term, I'm telling you the hard truth now. But that's not the purview of your research here.
No.
But you know, so I want to just circle back to the social benefit that you talked about for a second here, because several years ago I had a series of remarkable conversations with E.O. Wilson, right, the famed biologist, evolutionary biologist. You know, and he talked a lot about pro-social species or eusocial species, basically species that survive and thrive due to cooperation, and that, you know, human beings are that, in fact. We're very good at being cruel to each other. Let me acknowledge that. But we also may be hardwired to be cooperative societies. So I wonder, I mean, I'm trying to pull together fields here. But it almost makes sense at a species level that we would feel good about aiding others, about being kind to others, because it's actually a very pro-social behavior that strengthens the community overall, that we should be hardwired to feel good about that. So we would want to do it more.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes, there's this evolutionary purpose or this adaptiveness to feeling good when you help someone else, because it helps to ensure the survival of your genes and the species. So it could be the case that those who tend to feel better when they help others, that they're much more likely to then survive. Well, we know that they'll be in better health based on other research. And so there is an evolutionary advantage to that.
So then what stops us when we know we should be more kind or do more kind acts? What stops us from doing that?
Well, I think a very practical reason is that we have so much going on in our lives. And I find this in my research that younger and middle-aged adults tend to be juggling so many different social roles, like work and children, and having that intensify during the pandemic. I think it is the case that you need to have more of that free time and that purpose, that sense of purpose that you get from helping others, that needs to be there in order for you to be able to help. Huh.
Well, Jack, we've got a couple of minutes left here. And, you know, we're talking about this question of kindness in the midst of a pandemic when we have been asked to remain socially or physically distant from one another. But I know you have one more example of how a tiny act of physical kindness can be transformative, and I'd love it if you could share it with us.
Sure. It's from Dickens's Bleak House. Guster is a servant and an orphan, we're told, and Joe is a boy, a street sweeper. And Joe stinks because, of course, he sweeps the manure off the streets and people just avoid him as a result. But she's feeding him in this scene. "Here's something to eat, poor boy," says Guster. "Thank you, Mum," says Joe. "Are you hungry?" "Just," says Joe. "What's gone of your father and your mother, eh?" Joe stops in the middle of a bite and looks petrified. For this orphan charge of the Christian saint whose shrine was at Tooting has patted him on the shoulder, and it is the first time in his life that any decent hand has been so laid upon him. An unconscious act of kindness that Joe, he doesn't even know how to react to it. He's petrified by a gentle hand on his shoulder.
And what does that mean to you, Jack?
Well, it means that that sometimes things we don't even intend as kindness, that just seem, you know, spontaneous, can mean so much when the person's state of deprival is so extreme.
Yeah. So Professor Sin, we just got a couple of minutes left here. What are the big lessons here that we should take away on what your research is showing?
Yeah, well, I think that we have to think about how to move forward as this pandemic is continuing. And I think your story with Allison and Charlotte really illustrates how important it is to find ways to creatively and safely allow people to help other, to maintain social connections and to help others. So I think one idea is the intergenerational volunteering that was illustrated in that story. Younger people are really craving more social connection. And we know there's a lot of research showing that young people tend to have the highest rates of depression and loneliness right now during the pandemic. So one idea is to have younger folks pair up with older folks and to promote more of that social connection.
And we're talking about authentic social connections, because I'm sorry, but my brain just cannot help but to think, well, we are awash in digital social connections all the time, which, of course, can actually give rise to the worst of human behaviors here. So, that's a really important distinction. You're talking about, in fact, one-on-one social connections?
Yes, absolutely. One-on-one, building a relationship, just like Allison and Charlotte had demonstrated in their touching story.
Okay. And so are you saying that should young people be trying to seek out more volunteer opportunities? Or, I mean, what should be next steps for someone listening to this?
Yes. So seeking out safe volunteering opportunities could be something that someone can do to build a greater sense of purpose during this time. We know now that providing help to other people can bring benefits for the giver, but also for the recipient.
Well, Nancy Sin is assistant professor of psychology at the University of British Columbia. Her research focuses on the biological and behavioral pathways linking well-being and stress to health. And we've been talking about her research. She's a lead author in a recent study that links kindness with positive emotions. Professor Sin, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And Jack Beatty, On Point News Analyst. Jack, thank you so very much. It's always a pleasure to hear your thoughts and your literary explorations on this show. Thank you, Jack.
Thank you very much.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.